Hey guys, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast that I know you're going to love. Do you like travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation, and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by a true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband, and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and WTF stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Karina Bemisterfer, host of Morning Cup of Murder, your daily true crime podcast. Yes, you heard me right. Daily true crime. Every day, Morning Cup of Murder tells you a straightforward, short-form story about murder, true crime, cold cases, disappearances, serial killers, cults, and more. And I do that all in under 15 minutes. With over 3 years of stories and over 20 million downloads, the Morning Cup of Murder podcast has become a staple of so many people's daily routines. So why not add it to yours? Stream Morning Cup of Murder everywhere you listen to podcasts, and remember, stay safe.
And there's a lot of strange things that have happened throughout history, and there's no doubt about that. Some of them we know well, but others rarely get talked about. One of those is the story of the Taliesin House Massacre. Frank Lloyd Wright, celebrated globally as America's premier architect and a pivotal figure in 20th century design, is one of the most popular and talented creators the world has ever known. He was a visionary and a game changer in what he did, but there's also a very dark chapter in his history. It's often overshadowed by his acclaim. So much so, it almost seems like it's intentional that this story has been kept under wraps as to not taint his reputation, because many have no idea that it ever even happened. The horrific incident we're covering today occurred back in 1914. It saw Wright's lover and six other people being brutally murdered at his Wisconsin home and workspace that he named Taliesin. Did he have anything to do with it? Well, no, not exactly. Though, that all depends on how you look at it. A little background on the main man himself, in case you're not familiar. Wright revolutionized the architectural landscape in the U.S. with his philosophy of organic architecture, which are designs that harmonize with humanity and the environment around. He sought not to tear down nature and build something up from scratch, but rather use what the world around him provided and design off of that. As a result, he created some of the most sought-after and unique homes we've ever known. In his lifetime, he built around 400 structures in total. His creations, such as Falling Water in Pennsylvania, is a house built right on top of a waterfall, where the water flows seamlessly underneath it and out into the river below. He also built in cities. The Guggenheim Museum in New York City is another one of his. And in a landscape marked by square and rectangular buildings, Wright made a beautiful circular spiral. Inside, people walk up a ramp running along the wall, and it presents the art hanging there in a unique way. There's never a break like in other museums where you walk from room to room. Here, you just endlessly take in the priceless pieces in a way that lets the mind wander in a creative way. Overall, his designs have etched an indelible mark on modern design. He was interested in not just constructing buildings, but wanting to craft experiences. However, when you dig deeper into his past, you can see that Wright's professional triumphs at times were overshadowed by his tumultuous personal life. His affair with Martha Borthwick scandalized early 20th century society, although it wasn't all that out of the ordinary for these sorts of things to happen. Frank's wife knew about Martha and accepted it, though that doesn't make it right. The media, mainly the newspapers back then, protected prominent figures like presidents, celebrities, and famous architects, of course, and didn't air out all their dirty laundry like they do today. However, what happened to his mistress, Martha, and six other people, including her own two children in the summer of 1914, isn't something that can simply be overlooked. If it happened today, it would be the biggest story of the year, and that's saying a lot. Wright designed his Taliesin home as a sanctuary that sat among the rolling hills of Spring Green, Wisconsin. It was a refuge from the public scrutiny over his affair with Martha. And it was here, in this idyllic setting, that Wright sought to create a haven for their life together, at least as best he could. However, this sanctuary was to be completely destroyed in more ways than one, and only Wright could have put a stop to it. On the hot summer day of August 15th of 1914, while Wright was out of town handling some business, Martha decided to have a nice lunch spread on the porch that was connected to the dining room. It was a covered porch. Large glass windows along the sides gave a beautiful view of the landscape outside. Sandwiches and iced tea were laid out. Martha was accompanied by her two kids, John and Martha, alongside five of Wright's staff members: Emil Brodel, Thomas Brunker, David Lindblom, Herbert Fritz, and William Weston, including Weston's young son, Ernest. While the nine of them were enjoying their meals, Julian Carlton, the handyman responsible for a bunch of different tasks on the estate, headed up to the house where he asked Weston for permission to grab a gasoline can from inside, as he said there were some rugs that needed cleaning. Without batting an eye, he let Carlton in. After all, he had worked there for a few years at this point. And it was this request, seemingly harmless at the time, that tragically set the stage for the ensuing violence. Once he grabbed the gas, he made his way to where everyone was eating. Then Carlton, out of nowhere, raised up an axe he carried and launched a vicious attack, first striking Martha and then her children with several blows. He warned the others not to move or else they'd meet the same fate. Terrified, unarmed, and in shock as they stood next to the three bodies lying on the floor, they didn't dare test the man who had a crazed look in his eyes. Carlton then picked up the gasoline and doused the porch as he walked backwards, keeping an eye on everyone. He made his way into the dining room, where he sprayed the walls and floor with the liquid. And in what seemed like a grand middle finger to Frank, he lit his Zippo lighter and tapped it to the floor. The whole place went up in a blaze, and everyone on the porch was trapped. Not only was Carlton brutally dispatching the loved ones and co-workers of Frank, he was also taking down the man's precious design as well, for good measure. As that wing of the house burned, in a desperate attempt to escape, those who weren't instantly engulfed in the flames and smoke tried to break a window to get out. And they almost did. But a crazed Carlton fought through the flames and wielded his axe, making sure no one got out. When he was satisfied, Carlton ran off. Miraculously, two men survived, though. Herbert Fritz, who managed to escape early enough to evade Carlton even noticing, and William Weston, who Carlton injured severely and assumed was dead. And Fritz ran as fast as he could to a neighbor's, where he sought help. The police and fire engines came soon after, and once the flames were extinguished, they entered the home, and that's when they discovered Carlton barely alive, hiding in the basement, after drinking a large amount of hydrochloric acid. He would go on to survive, though the next several weeks were torturous for the man. He had destroyed his insides, his stomach and esophagus by what he had done. He would soon pass away due to starvation, as he simply couldn't eat with those types of injuries. Because of his passing, the motive behind Carlton's heinous actions never fully came to light. Before he died, though, in front of a judge, he pleaded not guilty. But other than that, refused to talk all that much, particularly because it was physically hard for him to do so after downing his cocktail, and probably in part because he knew his time was coming. Though the drinking of acid should give you some idea as to where the man's head was at, that simply has to be one of the worst ways to go out, and so to inflict that on yourself just shows you how deranged this individual was. And this certainly was not someone who may have been hired by, say, Frank himself to get rid of a problem, which people did suspect very early on in this case. However, Frank doesn't get off completely scot-free. The prevailing theory suggests that Carlton essentially snapped upon learning of his imminent job termination at Taliesin. There were reports of Carlton's prior conflicts with other staff and Martha in particular. And in fact, right at the time, was searching for the man's replacement. Carlton's wife, Gertrude, indicated her husband had become increasingly disturbed and was acting very strange in the days leading up to this. He wanted to get another job somewhere else in a bid to beat Frank to the punch, but it was harder to do than he thought. When an employee becomes volatile, it's always a tricky situation, especially when they work in the place you live at. You have to be careful. You don't want to set them off. That's why in the corporate world, they fire people on Fridays, because everyone looks forward to the weekend, so it's your best chance of avoiding any major flip-outs. And Frank had to tiptoe around the problem until he could find a solution, make a clean break one day, but if you wait too long, as he apparently did, sometimes, like in this case, things can boil over in a devastating way. Wright was never the same after this. His decision to rebuild Taliesin from its ashes was a defiant act of resilience. He wasn't going to let any handyman get the best of him. And he showed that to the fullest extent as he continued to live and work from that home until he passed away in 1959. And despite its tumultuous origin, from a home built for Wright's extramarital affair, the scene of Wisconsin's most fatal rampage by a single perpetrator, Taliesin remains a significant attraction, drawing countless visitors annually. Frank Wright was no doubt an architectural genius, but the story goes to show you that sometimes over the course of history and how it's written, the negatives in one's life can be easily suppressed. But make no mistake about it, when this happened, it was devastating for many people, especially for Frank. Had he paid more attention or acted faster, he could have saved the lives of 7 people, and he knew that. He made sure he was reminded of it every day by staying in the Taliesin, which still stands to this day. So that's the story of Frank Lloyd Wright and the massacre at Taliesin. I'm Andrew, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you want to watch this episode, plus all the rest, go check us out on YouTube. And for even darker true crime stories, check out our exclusive podcast over on Patreon. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to us today. Really appreciate it. I'll see you guys in the next one.